Chapter 28. Lily. Elisa has the bright idea of just setting them on the floor on a layer of trash bags, so it'll be an easy cleanup. Emmy and her cousin Riley are both covered in cake now. Emmy has no idea what's going on, but she's enjoying herself. We ended up having a small party for her here at Elisa's. My mother is here, Ryle's parents, Marshall and Elisa. Ryle is also here, but he's about to leave. He snaps a couple of photos on his phone before giving both the girls a quick kiss goodbye. I heard him telling Marshall it's been a busy day with work, but he made the party. I was happy he made it in time for presents, and he stayed until the cake was mostly demolished. I know it'll mean something to Emmy someday when she sees the pictures. We haven't spoken the entire time he's been here. We've circled around each other, pretending everything is fine in front of everyone, but Ryle is anything but fine. I can feel the tension radiating from him while standing across the room. Being ignored by him is better than being blamed by him, though. I'd take the silent treatment over the alternative any day. Unfortunately, I don't get the silent treatment for long. Ryle is making eye contact with me for the first time today. I made the mistake of standing alone, so he takes this as an opportunity to walk over and stand beside me. I stiffen, not wanting to do this right now. We haven't spoken since he insulted me while walking out of my flower shop last week. I know we need to have a conversation, but our daughter's birthday party is not the time or place. Ryle slips his hands into his pockets. He tucks his chin against his chest and stares at the floor.
What did your lawyer say?
Anger climbs up my chest. I side-eye him and give my head a shake. We aren't having this conversation right now.
Then when?
It's not really a matter of when, but who with. Because I'm not going to discuss anything while we're alone ever again. He's proven to me that I'm not safe when I'm alone with him, so that privilege is over. I'll text you, I say, and then I walk away, leaving Ryle standing alone. My mother is holding Emmy, wiping cake off her face and hands, so I head in their direction. But Elisa pulls me aside before I reach them. Let's chat, she says. I follow her to her bedroom where she sits on her bed. She only brings me to her bedroom when she wants to confront me about something, and her timing is always impeccably intuitive. I roll my eyes as soon as I walk into her room, and then I sit down on her bed. What do you want to know? It's been a couple of weeks since we've caught up alone. There's a lot she could be wondering about my life. It's been pretty eventful here lately. Elisa falls back onto the bed. Things between you and Ryle feel kind of off today. It's noticeable? I notice everything. Are you okay? I think long and hard about that question. Are you okay? I used to hide from that question because I wasn't okay. Even months after Emerson's birth, when someone would ask me that, I would put on a smile while I shriveled up inside. This is the first time I'm not lying when I say, "Yes, I'm okay." Elisa regards me silently. There's a reassurance in her expression, like she might even believe me this time. She grabs my hand and pulls me until I'm lying on the bed next to her. She locks our arms at the elbows, and we just stare up at the ceiling, enjoying a moment of silence in a house full of people. I'm glad I still have Elisa. That would have been the most heartbreaking thing of all to have to lose in my divorce. I'm grateful she's so full of forgiveness and positivity. I wish I could say the same for her brother. Sometimes I feel like Ryle has a monster inside him that is on a constant search to be offended. His dark side feeds off drama, and if no one gives him any, he makes it up. But I can't be a player in his game anymore. I know my intentions were pure when I was married to Ryle, no matter how much Ryle wanted his delusions to be true so they could excuse his behavior.
How are things with Adonis?
I laugh.
You mean Atlas? I said what I said. Adonis, the beautiful Greek god you're in love with.
I laugh again.
Wasn't Adonis a product of incest?
Elisa shoves me.
Stop deflecting. How are things going?
I roll onto my stomach and lift up on my elbow.
Good, if we'd ever get to spend time together. His restaurant doesn't open until my flower shop closes. We haven't even spent an entire night with each other yet.
What's Atlas doing right now? Working?
I nod.
You should see if he can take off early, and I'll keep Emerson tonight.
We don't have plans tomorrow. You could come get her whenever.
My eyes widen at her offer.
For real?
Elisa climbs off the bed.
Riley loves it when she's here. Go spend the night with your Adonis.
I didn't text Atlas to let him know I was on my way to Corrigan's. He told me he'd be working there tonight, and I thought it might be fun to surprise him. But when I walk through the doors that lead to the kitchen, I'm amazed at how busy it is. No one even hears me enter, so I look around until I spot him. Atlas is inspecting each plate as they're given to him to place on trays, then the waitstaff quickly disappear with the food through the double doors. This place is more upscale than Bibbs, and I thought Bibbs was upscale. All the waiters are dressed in formal attire. Atlas is in a white chef's coat that matches a couple of the others in the kitchen. They've got such a groove going, I question whether I should have shown up. I feel like I'll be in the way if I walk over to him, but I suddenly feel very awkward that I just showed up without letting him know. I recognize Darren as soon as he spots me. He smiles and nods his head, then gets Atlas's attention. He motions toward me, and when Atlas turns around and sees me in his kitchen, his eyes light up. But only momentarily. The fact that I'm here instantly changes his excitement to concern. He makes a beeline for me, sidestepping around a waiter who was walking back into the kitchen with an empty tray.
Hey, everything okay?
It's fine. Elisa decided to keep Emmy for the night, so I thought I'd stop by.
Atlas smiles hopefully.
Is she keeping her for the whole night?
There's a flicker of flirtation in his eyes. I nod.
Hot behind, someone yells from behind me.
Hot behind? My eyes widen just as Atlas pulls us out of the way of a waiter carrying a tray of food.
Kitchen slang, he says, means you're in the way of hot food.
Oh. Atlas laughs and then looks over his shoulder at all the plates he's falling behind on.
Give me about 20 minutes to get us caught up.
Of course. I didn't come here to ask you to leave early. I thought I could watch you work for a while. It's kind of fun.
Atlas points to a metal counter.
Sit there. It's the best view, and you won't get knocked over. Gets pretty busy back here. Be done soon.
He lifts my chin and bends to kiss me. Then he backs away and returns to what he was doing before I walked in. I take a seat on the counter and pull up my legs, crossing them so that I'm completely out of the way. I notice a few of the employees stealing glances at me, which makes me somewhat uncomfortable. Out of all the people back here right now, I've only met Darren, so I have no idea who any of them are. I do wonder what they're thinking of the random girl Atlas just kissed who is now watching them work. I don't know if Atlas normally brings women around, but I get the feeling he doesn't. Everyone is looking at me like this is an anomaly. Darren comes over to greet me as soon as he gets a chance. He gives me a quick hug and says,
"Good to see you again, Lily. You still hustling unassuming poker players?"
I laugh. "Not for a while now. Do you guys still have your poker nights?"
He shakes his head.
"Nah, we're too busy now that Atlas has both restaurants. It was difficult finding a night we could all meet up."
"That's a shame. Are you working here now?"
"Not officially. Atlas wanted to see how I work with the menu here. He's thinking of promoting me to head chef."
He leans in and smiles.
"He said he wants more time off. I guess now I know why."
Darren tosses a rag over his shoulder.
"It was good seeing you. Sounds like you'll be around more often."
He winks before walking away. Knowing Atlas is making an effort to spend less time at work makes my stomach swirl with happiness. I spend the next 15 minutes silently watching Atlas work. Every now and then, he'll glance at me and give me a warm smile, but the rest of the time, he's focused on his job. His intensity and confidence are mesmerizing. No one seems intimidated by him, but everyone appears to want his opinion. He's constantly being asked questions, and he responds to each one of them with patience. In between those moments of teaching, there's a lot of yelling. Not the kind of yelling I'd expect to find in a kitchen, but people calling out food orders and cooks yelling their acknowledgments. It's loud and busy, but the vibe is a rush. It's honestly not at all what I expected to find. I thought I'd see a whole new side to Atlas, one where he barked orders with anger and behaved like all the chefs I've seen on television. But thankfully, that's not at all what is happening in this kitchen. After a thrilling half an hour goes by, Atlas finally steps away from his station. He washes his hands before walking over to me. I get this knot of excitement in my stomach when he leans forward and presses his mouth to mine, like he doesn't care that all his staff can see us.
"Sorry that took so long," he says.
"I enjoyed it. It was different than I expected."
"How so?"
"I thought all chefs were assholes and screamed at their staff." He laughs.
"No assholes in this kitchen. Sorry to disappoint."
He uncrosses my legs so he can stand between them.
"Guess what?"
"What?"
"Josh is staying over at Theo's tonight."
I can't hold back my grin. What a wonderful coincidence. Atlas's eyes sweep over me, and then he leans his head against mine, pressing his lips lightly against my ear.
"Your place or mine?"
"Yours. I want to be in a bed that smells like you." He nips at my ear, sending chills down my neck. Then he takes my hands and helps me down from the counter. He gives his attention to someone passing by.
"Hey, can you take over the pass?"
The guy says,
"You bet."
Atlas looks back at me and says,
"Meet you at my house."
I stop by my apartment before going to his restaurant to pack a bag, just in case this was a possibility. So I get to his place before he does. While I wait for Atlas, I use the time in my car to check in with Elisa. "Did she fall asleep okay?"
"Just fine. How's your night going?"
"Just fine." Wink.
"Have fun. I expect a full report."
Atlas's headlights shine through my car as he pulls into his driveway. I'm still gathering my things when he opens my car door. As soon as I climb out of the car, Atlas dips an impatient hand into my hair and kisses me. It's the kind of kiss that screams, "I've missed kissing you." When he pulls back, he studies my face with a gentle smile.
"I liked you watching me in the kitchen tonight."
A shiver passes over me. "I like watching you." I can't say it without grinning. I grab my bag from the passenger seat, and Atlas takes it from me and hoists it over his shoulder. I follow him through the garage. He still has moving boxes piled up along one wall. There's a weight bench in pieces on the floor next to the unpacked boxes. There are two full baskets of laundry sitting in front of a washer and dryer. Seeing a little bit of disarray in his garage is comforting. I was beginning to think he was too good to be true, but Atlas Corrigan is behind on life and behind on laundry like the rest of us. He unlocks his house and holds the door open for me. It's smaller than his last one, but it's more him. And it's not a cut-and-paste brick building in a subdivision of similar-looking homes. The houses in this neighborhood have character. Each one is vastly different, from the pink two-story house on the corner to the modern boxy glass one at the other end of the street. Atlas's house is a bungalow-style home nestled in between two larger homes. When I was here last time, I noted that he somehow got the biggest backyard of the three. Plenty of room for a garden someday. Atlas enters his security code into his keypad.
"It's 9595.
He says,
"If you ever need in."
9595, I repeat, noting it's the same number combination as his phone. He's a man of commitment. I like it. His security code isn't a key to his house, but it feels almost as significant. He places my bag on his couch and then flips on the living room light. My back is to the wall, and I'm standing out of the way, watching him. It's a good thing he informed me that he liked it when I was watching him at work, because watching Atlas is my favorite pastime. I could live my life as a fly on his wall and be content. "What's your routine when you get home at night?" Atlas tilts his head.
"What do you mean?"
I gesture at the room. "What do you do when you get home at night? Pretend I'm not here." He regards me silently. Then he walks toward me, pausing right in front of me. He presses a hand onto the wall beside my head and leans in.
"Well,"
he whispers,
"first I take off my shoes."
I hear one of his shoes being kicked off, then the other. He's suddenly an inch lower and even closer to my mouth. He feathers his lips lightly across mine, sending fireworks popping beneath my skin.
"Then,"
he kisses the corner of my mouth,
"I take a shower."
He pushes off the wall and backs away, his eyes locked on mine in a dare. He disappears into his bedroom. I'm inhaling a steadying breath when I hear his shower start running. I slip off my shoes and leave them next to his. Then I follow the path he took down the hallway. I gently push open the half-closed door and take in his bedroom in person for the first time. I've seen it in our video chats, but I didn't come in here when I came to his house the first time. I recognize his black headboard and the denim blue accent wall behind it, but the rest of his bedroom is new to me. I pass over everything in search of the bathroom door. He left it open. His shirt is on the floor by the doorway. I don't know why my heart is pounding like it'll be my first time seeing Atlas without clothes. It's not like I'm brand new to this, or him, or even to showering with him. But every time I'm with him, it's like my heart gets amnesia. I make it to the doorway of his bathroom, disappointed to see that his shower is hidden behind half of a stone wall. I can hear the breaks and splashes in the shower stream, and I feel a tightening in every curve of my body. I don't leave my clothes with his. I stay dressed and slowly make my way over to the shower. I press my back flush against the long wall of his bathroom, and I inch closer to the shower opening, leaning my head in just enough to get a peek at him. Atlas is standing under the stream of water, his eyes closed, the water coming down directly on his face as he runs his fingers through his hair. I stay quiet and still and continue leaning against the wall while I watch him. He knows I'm here, but he ignores my presence and allows me to soak up the sight of him. I want to run my hands over the rise and fall of muscles across his shoulders, and I want to kiss the dimples in his lower back. He is absolutely beautiful. Once he rinses all the soap out of his hair and off his face, he looks toward me. His eyes catch mine, and they narrow, darken. Then he faces me, my gaze falling, falling.
"Lily."
My eyes move back up to his, and he's smirking. Then, so quickly, he strides across the wet tile and yanks me away from the wall until I'm wrapped in his arms. He pulls me into the shower with him, and I gasp from the rush of it all. He catches my gasp in his mouth as he grips my thighs, pulling my wet blue jean-covered legs around him. My back meets the shower wall, taking some of my weight off Atlas so that he can free up a hand. He uses that free hand to unbutton my shirt. I use both of mine to help him. We stop kissing long enough for him to lower me to my feet so that he can slip the shirt down my arms. The shirt plops against the shower floor with a small splash just as Atlas's fingers meet the button on my jeans. His mouth is hungry and back on mine as he slides his hands between my hips and my panties, tugging my clothes down one difficult inch at a time. He grips the waistband on the sides of my jeans and lowers himself down my body as he works to slide them off me. Once they're around my ankles, I help him by kicking them off. Then he places his hands on the backs of my calves and slowly works his way back up me. When he's fully standing again, his fingers gather behind my back at the clasp of my bra. My stomach clenches as he begins to unfasten it. His mouth finds mine again, but this kiss is gentle and slow, like the removal of this last piece of clothing deserves to be savored. I feel his hands slide to my shoulders, and then he tucks his fingers beneath the straps and slips them down my arms. My bra begins to fall away from me, and Atlas pulls away from my mouth long enough to admire me. His hand curves over my hip and then slides over my ass, squeezing me. I wrap my arms around his neck and slide my lips across his jaw, settling my mouth over his ear. Then what? I watch as chills break out over his arms. He groans and then lifts me higher up the wall until we're aligned at the waist. I roll my hips into him, wanting to feel him hard against me, and he meets my movement with a quick thrust, forcing me to gasp. It's obvious we both want this, but he still looks at me for permission before he takes me right here in the shower. We've had the proper conversations about my being on birth control and both of us having been tested, so I just nod and whisper a desperate, "Yes." I grip his shoulders tighter in an attempt to take more weight off his arms so that he can position himself to push into me. He uses his left arm to hold me up and his right hand to grip himself, and then he rolls his hips forward and up until I feel the pressure of him inside of me. He sighs into my neck at the same time I release all the breath in my chest. It comes out like a moan, and that sound encourages Atlas to get that noise out of me again. My legs are tight around his waist, but he thrusts against me hard enough for them to unlock at the ankles. I start to slip down him, but he hoists me back up and repositions himself until I'm filled with him all over again. I release another moan, and he rolls into me a second time and a third time, and it may not be as graceful against a water-soaked shower wall as it is in a bed, but I can't get enough of the unruly side of him. He gives me that unruly side of him for several minutes before we're both too weak and breathless to continue this without the support of a bed. He doesn't say anything after he pulls out of me and lowers me to my feet. He just turns off the water and then grabs a towel. He starts at my hair, squeezing water out of it with both his hands, and then he slowly works his way down my body with the towel until I'm dry enough. He does a quick swipe of himself with a towel before grabbing my hand and walking me out of the bathroom. I don't know how something as simple as him holding my hand on our way to the bedroom can make my heart expand. Atlas lifts the blanket and motions for me to climb into his bed. It's so comfortable, it feels like I'm nestling into a cloud. He scoots in next to me, stopping only when he can't come even a centimeter closer to me. He's on his side, but he rolls me so that I'm flat on my back, tucked against him. I like this position. I like the way he's holding himself up on his elbow, hovering over me. I like the slight grin in his eyes, as if I'm a reward he's earned. Atlas lowers himself, and we're no longer easing into these kisses. It's an immediate, deep, and hungry kiss that starts with the dive of his tongue and ends with him impressively reaching for a condom and putting it on without interrupting the strength of his kiss. Atlas grips the inside of my thigh and pushes my leg aside to make room for himself. Then he's above me, pushing into me, and he moves against me until I find myself in the middle of a beautiful falling apart. Atlas is on his back on the bed, and I'm curled into him, my leg draped over his thigh. These are the moments I look forward to sharing with him the most, the quiet minutes we get to steal from the chaos of our lives, where it's just the two of us, satiated, content. My head is resting on his chest, his fingers are trailing back and forth over my arm. He kisses the top of my head and says,
How long has it been since we ran into each other on the street?
40 days, I say. I've been counting. He makes a huh sound, like that surprises him. Why? Does it feel longer?
No. I just wanted to know if you've been counting like I have.
I laugh and press my lips against his skin, right over his heart.
How were things at the party today?
He asks me. I know what he's asking without him having to say it. He wants to know how Ryle treated me. The party was good. I spoke to Ryle for maybe 5 seconds.
Was he unkind?
No, we just stayed out of each other's way, mostly. Atlas runs his fingers through my hair, pulling them through the strands and letting them fall over my back. He takes another handful and repeats the movement.
That's progress. Hopefully it'll just get easier from here.
Hopefully. I do hope things between Ryle and I continue to get easier, but I'm no longer letting his reactions control my happiness. I'm all in with Atlas, and I want to be present in that part of my life. If that makes Ryle upset or uncomfortable, Ryle is going to have to bear the burden of those feelings. I might ask Elisa to have a sit-down with me and Ryle this week. I want to discuss what happened and what to do going forward, but I don't want to discuss it with him alone.
That's smart.
Ryle and I may never get to a point where we can be more than merely civil. But I'd be okay with civil. What I'm not okay with are the insults, the threatening texts, the outbursts. He's got a lot of work to do, and I'm finally willing to hold him to task. I probably should have been firmer earlier on, but I've been trying to make it work in the least dramatic way possible. But I'm done bending my own life for Ryle's sake. My loyalty is to the people who bring positivity into my life. My loyalty is to the people who want to build me up and see me happy. Those are the people I'm going to make decisions about my life for. I'm going to continue doing the best I can, and that's all I can do. I may not have made all the right decisions in the right time frames, but the fact that I found the courage to make those decisions at all is what I'm going to keep focusing on. Atlas slips a finger beneath my chin, tilting my head back so that I'm looking at him. He's got this look on his face like he's right where he wants to be.
I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed this, he says.
He pulls me closer, sliding me up his chest so that I'm eye to eye with him. He caresses the side of my head.
I wish I could have you in my bed like this every night. I want to shower with you and cook with you and watch TV with you and go grocery shopping with you. I want everything with you. I hate that we have to pretend like we don't already know we're spending the rest of our lives together.
It's incredible how fast a heart rate can double. I slide my fingers over his lips. We aren't pretending. We are going to spend the rest of our lives together.
How long do we have to wait until we start?
From the looks of it, we've already started, I say.
How long do I have to wait before I ask you to move in with me?
Heat swirls in my stomach. 6 months, at least. He nods as if he's taking mental notes.
And how long before I'm allowed to propose?
A thickness forms in my throat, making it hard to swallow. A year. Year and a half.
A year from when we move in together, or a year from now?
From now. He grins, pulling me flat against him.
Good to know.
I can't help but laugh into his neck. That was a surprising conversation.
Yeah, my therapist is going to kill me when I tell him about it.
I'm smiling as I roll off him and lay on my side. I snuggle into the crook of his arm and run my fingers over Atlas's chest, and then trail them over the ridges of his stomach. His muscles clench and twitch beneath my fingernails. Do you work out?
When I can.
It shows. Atlas laughs lightheartedly.
Are you trying to flirt with me, Lily?
Yes.
I don't need compliments. You're naked and in my bed. Not much else you need to do. You won me over years ago.
I lift my head and smirk, like that's a challenge.
You don't think so?
He shakes his head, smiling lazily. He runs his thumb over my bottom lip.
Pretty sure I am filled to capacity. I think I may have even reached enlightenment tonight.
I keep my eyes locked with his, but I readjust myself, and then I slowly start to slide down his body.
I think I can still impress you, I whisper.
He releases a deep exhale when I press a kiss to his stomach. My gaze is still on his face, and I love that his expression begins to tighten while he watches me. He swallows when I start to move the sheet aside until he's no longer covered below the waist. His eyes darken.
Fuck, Lily.
He allows his head to fall back against his pillow as soon as my tongue slides up the length of him. He groans when I take him in my mouth, and then I prove him very wrong.
Chapter 29. Atlas. I can't get enough of her. But I think it's okay because she can't seem to get enough of me. She woke me up this morning by sliding on top of me and kissing my neck. She ended up on her back seconds later with my mouth between her thighs. Maybe we're so hungry for each other because we know it's rare that we'll get days like this. Or maybe it's because we've missed each other for so many years. Or maybe this is just what things are like when you're in love. I've been with women aside from Lily, but I'm convinced she's the only one I've ever truly loved. My feelings for Lily are amplified unlike anything I've ever experienced. They're even more amplified than the feelings I had for her when we were younger. It's different now. Stronger, deeper, more exciting. There's no way in hell I'd walk away from her now like I did back then. I know I was in a different headspace entirely at the age of 18, and that had a lot to do with why I didn't feel like I should stick around for her. But I'm all in now. I absolutely hate the idea of taking it slow. I get why we need to, but I don't have to like it. I want her near me every day because I feel absolutely unfulfilled on the days I can't see her. Now that we've stayed the night together, I have a feeling the ache is going to get worse. I'm going to grow irritable when I have to go too long without seeing her. She's standing right next to me while we brush our teeth, but I'm already dreading that she's about to leave. Maybe if I offer to cook her breakfast, I'll get her for at least another hour. Why do you have a spare toothbrush? Lily asks me. She spits her toothpaste into my sink and winks at me. You have overnight guests a lot? I smile at her and rinse my mouth, but I don't answer that question. I have that toothbrush for her, but I don't want to admit it. I've made a lot of small moves over the years that were all excused with, just in case Lily. After she left my place a couple of years ago while she was hiding from Ryle, I went out and bought a lot of things just in case she needed to come back. An extra toothbrush, more comfortable pillows for my guest room, a change of clothes in case she showed up in an emergency. I had a Lily emergency kit, if you will. I guess now it's more of a Lily sleepover kit. And yes, I brought it all to the new house with me when I moved. I've always had a little bit of hope that we'd end up together someday. Hell, if I'm being honest with myself, I've had a great deal of hope. I've based a lot of my decisions on the possibility that Lily might come back into my life. I even chose this house over another one I was considering simply because of the backyard. It looked like a backyard Lily would fall in love with. I wipe my mouth on a hand towel and then hand it to her to use. Can I make you breakfast before you go? Yeah, but kiss me first. I taste better than I did this morning. She stands on her tiptoes and I wrap my arms around her and lift her the rest of the way to my mouth. I kiss her while I walk her out of the bathroom and then drop her onto my mattress. I hover over her. You want pancakes? Crepes? An omelet, biscuits, and gravy? Before she can answer me, my doorbell rings. Josh is home. I give her a quick peck. He likes pancakes. Will that work? I love pancakes. Pancakes it is. I walk to the living room and unlock the door for Josh. I open it, and then I immediately freeze at the sight of my mother. I sigh, frustrated I didn't use the peephole. She looks at me flatly, her arms folded across her chest. I got a visit from a caseworker yesterday. Her eyes are accusing, but at least she isn't yelling. I am not about to do this with Lily here. I step outside and try to close the door, but my mother slaps it open. Josh, get out here, she yells into the house. He isn't here. I keep my voice low. Where is he? At a friend's house. I pull my phone out of my pocket and check the time. Brad said he'd have Josh here by 10, and it's 10:15. Please don't let him show up while Sutton is here. Call him, she demands. The door is wide open from when Sutton pushed it, so I can see out of the corner of my eye when Lily emerges from the hallway. This is not how I wanted my morning with Lily to end. I can feel the regret slide all the way through me. I shoot her an apologetic look and then give my attention back to Sutton. What did the caseworker say? I ask her. Her mouth screws into a tight twist and then she looks to her left. They're not even opening an investigation. If you don't return him to me today, I'll file charges. I know the steps Child Protective Services has to take during an investigation, and they haven't even contacted Josh for an interview yet. You're lying. I'd like you to leave. I'll leave when I have my son. I exhale. He doesn't want to live with you right now. Or ever. But I save that sting. He doesn't want to live with me? She repeats with a laugh. What kid that age wants to live with their parents? And how many parents haven't slapped a kid that age? They don't end custody over that. Jesus Christ! She folds her arms over her chest again. The only reason you're doing this is to get back at me. If she knew me, she would know I'm not vengeful like she is. But of course, the conclusion she comes up with is something that only fits her own personality. Do you miss him? I ask her, my voice calm. Honestly, do you miss him? Because if you're doing this to prove something to someone, just let it go. Please. Brad's car turns onto the street, and I wish there were a way I could ask him to keep driving. But he's pulling up to the curb before I can even reach my phone. Sutton follows my line of sight and sees Josh opening the back door of Brad's car. She immediately walks toward the car, but Josh pauses when he sees her. More like freezes. He doesn't know what to do. Sutton snaps her fingers and points at her car. Let's go. We're leaving. Josh immediately looks at me. I shake my head and motion for him to come inside. Brad can sense something is off, so he puts the car in park and opens his door. Josh ducks his head and walks directly across the yard, past Sutton, and rushes toward me. Sutton is hot on his trail, so I try to get Josh inside quick enough to close the door on her, but she's too fast. I'm not about to injure her with the door, so I just let her inside. I guess we're doing this now. I wave to Brad to let him know he can go, and then I look at Lily, who is standing against a wall, watching everything unfold with a surprised look on her face. I mouth, "I'm sorry." Josh tosses his backpack on the floor and sits down on the couch, firmly folding his arms. I'm not going with you, he says to Sutton. This isn't up to you. Josh looks directly at me, pleading. You said I could stay here. You can. Sutton shoots daggers at me like I'm out of line. Maybe I am. Maybe it's not my business to be getting in the way of a mother and her child, but she should have thought twice about that before she made me that child's brother. I can't turn the other way and just hope he makes it out okay. If you don't come with me, I'll have your brother arrested. Josh slaps his hands on the couch and pushes himself up. Why can't it be my choice? He yells. Why do I have to live with either one of you? I've told you both I want to live with my dad, but no one will help me find him. Josh's voice cracks and then he's marching down the hallway. The slam of his door makes me flinch. Or maybe it was what he said before running to his room. Either way, I feel punctured. Sutton can see the sting because she's staring at me, assessing my reaction to that. Then she starts to laugh. Oh, Atlas. You thought you were doing something here? Forming a bond with him? She shakes her head and throws up her hand in defeat. Take him to his daddy. You'll be running back to me next week, just like you did the last time you needed my help. She walks to the door and leaves, and I'm too dazed by everything that just happened to walk over and lock it. Lily does it for me. She starts to walk toward me with a face full of sympathy, but as soon as she pulls me in for a hug, I shake my head and separate myself from her. I need a minute.
Chapter 30. Lily. Atlas closes his bedroom door behind him, and I find myself alone in his living room. I feel awful for both of them. I can't believe that was his mother. Or maybe I can. After hearing stories of her, I imagined her to be that unhinged, but I guess I expected her to look different. Both Atlas and his brother look so much like her that it makes it difficult to see that kind of behavior come from someone Atlas is related to. They are polar opposites. I take a seat on the edge of the couch, shocked that I just witnessed all of that. I've never seen Atlas that affected. I want to go hug him, but I can absolutely understand that he needs a moment alone. Josh, too. The poor kid. I don't want to leave before saying goodbye to Atlas, but I also don't want to disturb him until he's had a moment to recover. I walk to the kitchen and open the refrigerator. I look for the ingredients to make breakfast for them. I kept it simple because that's all I really know how to do. I made scrambled eggs and bacon and put a pan of biscuits in the oven. When the biscuits are almost ready, I go tap on Josh's bedroom door. I can at least offer him something to eat while I wait for Atlas to come out of his room. Josh opens the door about 2 inches and looks at me. "You want some breakfast?" I ask him. "Is Sutton gone?" I nod, so he opens the door and follows me down the hall. Josh gets himself something to drink while I pull the biscuits out and make us both a plate of breakfast. I sit across from him at the table, and he eyes me while he eats. I feel like I'm being sized up. "Where's Emerson?" he asks. "She's with her aunt." Josh nods and takes a bite of his food. Then, "How long have you and my brother been together?" I shrug. "That depends. I've known him since I was 15, but we started dating about a month and a half ago." There's a flash of surprise on Josh's face. "Really? Were you like friends back then or something?" "Or something." I take a sip of my coffee and then set it down carefully. "Your brother didn't have anywhere to live when I met him, so I helped him for a while." Josh leans back in his chair. "Really? I thought he lived with our mom." "When she and your dad would allow it," I say. "But he spent a lot of time trying to survive without their help." I hope I'm not saying too much, but I feel like Josh needs a better understanding of Atlas. "Go easy on your brother, okay? He cares a lot about you." Josh stares at me for a beat, then nods. He leans over his plate again, taking a bite of bacon. He drops the bacon back onto the plate and wipes his mouth with a napkin. "His cooking is normally better than this." I laugh. "That's because I made it." "Oh, shit," Josh says. "Sorry." I don't take offense at all, because I'm sure he's getting used to Atlas's cooking. "Do you think you want to be a chef like him? He told me you like helping out at the restaurants." Josh shrugs. "I don't know. It's fun, maybe, but I feel like I'll get tired of it. He works a lot of nights. I feel like I'll get tired of any career after a few years, though, so I don't know what I'll do." Sometimes I feel like I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. "I thought you owned a flower shop or something. That's what Atlas told me." "I do. Before that, I used to work at a marketing firm." I push my plate aside and fold my arms on the table. "I still feel like you do, though. Worried about boredom. Why are we expected to pick one thing to try and be successful at? What if I want to do something completely different every 5 years?" Josh nods like he's in complete agreement.
The teachers at school talk like we have to decide on one thing we love and stick with it. But I want to do 100 things.
I love how animated he is right now. He reminds me so much of a younger Atlas.
Like what?
I want to be a professional fisherman. I don't know how to fish, but it sounds fun. And I want to be a chef. And sometimes I think it would be fun to make a movie.
Sometimes I dream of selling my flower shop and opening a clothing boutique.
I want to make pottery and sell it at fairs.
I'd like to write a book someday.
I want to be the captain of a ship, he says.
I think it would be fun to be an art teacher.
I think it would be fun to be a bouncer at a strip club.
I sputter laughter at that, but I'm not the only one laughing. Josh and I glance up at Atlas, who is leaning in the doorway, laughing at our conversation. I'm relieved to see him in a better mood than the one his mother left him in. Atlas smiles at me warmly.
Lily made us breakfast, Josh says to him.
I see that.
Atlas walks over and kisses me on the cheek, then picks up a piece of bacon and takes a bite.
Kind of sucks, Josh mutters in warning.
Don't insult my girlfriend, or I'll stop cooking for you.
Atlas steals the last slice of bacon off Josh's plate.
These eggs are great, Lily, Josh says with fake enthusiasm.
I laugh while Atlas takes a seat next to me. As much as I want to spend the entire day here with him, I've already stayed longer than I intended. It also feels like he and Josh have a lot to work out today. I have to go, I say regretfully. Atlas nods, and I scoot back from the table. I'm going to go grab my stuff. I walk to the bedroom, but I don't close Atlas's door, so I hear their conversation as I'm packing my bag. Atlas says,
You feel like taking a road trip today?
Where to? Josh asks.
I found your dad's address.
I pause gathering my things and walk closer to the door so I can hear Josh's response.
You did?
There's a new excitement in Josh's voice.
Does he know we're coming?
No. I only got his address. I don't know how to get in touch with him. But you were right. He's in Vermont.
I can hear the dread Atlas is attempting to cover up in his voice all the way from his bedroom. God, I hate this for him. I hear Josh running toward his room.
He is going to be so shocked.
I finish packing with a heavier heart. When I walk back into the kitchen, Atlas is standing in front of the sink, staring out the window into his backyard. He doesn't hear me, so I put my hand on his shoulder. He immediately pulls me in and kisses me on the side of my head.
I'll walk you to your car.
He carries my bag to the car and places it in the back seat. I open my door, but we hug again before I climb inside. This is the kind of hug Atlas gave me when he showed up at my apartment needing a hug that night. It's long and sad, and I don't want to let go of him. What do you think is going to happen when you get there? I ask. Atlas finally releases me, but keeps his hand on my hip while he leans against my car. He sighs, threading his finger through a belt loop on my jeans.
I don't know. Why do I feel so worried for him?
Because you love him. Atlas's eyes scroll over my face.
Is that why I always feel worried for you? Because I love you?
My breath hitches at his question. I don't know. Do you? Atlas digs his fingers into my waist, and he pulls me to him. He lifts his hand and traces a finger down my neck until it meets my tattoo.
I've loved you for years and years and years, Lily. You know that.
He moves his finger and then kisses me there. And that move, coupled with his words, takes everything in me to keep my composure. I've loved you for just as long. Atlas nods.
I know you have. No one on this earth loves me like you do.
He cradles my head in both of his hands, and he tilts my face up to his, and he kisses me. When he pulls back, he looks at me longingly, like I've already left and he's already sad about it. Or maybe that's just what I'm imagining he feels, since that's what I feel.
I'll call you tonight. I love you.
I love you, too. Good luck today. I drive home with such conflicted feelings. Every moment with him over this last day was more than I could have hoped for. But knowing what he's about to face makes my heart feel like a piece of it broke off and stayed with him. I'm going to be thinking about him all day. I'm hoping they don't find Tim. But if they do, I hope Josh makes the right decision.
Chapter 31. Atlas. It's a 3-hour drive there. Josh hasn't said much. He's been reading, although if he's as nervous as I am about this, I'm not sure he's actually absorbing anything he's reading. He's been on the same page for 5 minutes. It's a drawing of what looks like a battle scene, but mostly all I see is cleavage. "Is that manga appropriate for a 12-year-old?" I ask him. He shifts ever so slightly so that the cover of the book is all I can see. "Yes?" His voice dropped an entire octave on that lie. At least he's a horrible liar. If he ends up staying with me, detecting when he is or isn't telling me the truth should be easy. If he ends up staying with me, maybe I should buy him a few self-help books for balance. I'll stock his bookshelves with whatever graphic novels he wants, and then secretly slip in a few of my own to supplement my lack of skills as a guardian. Untamed, Man Enough, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. Heck, maybe even some sacred text from every major world religion. I'll take whatever help I can get. Especially after today. As much as Josh may think this is a one-way trip, I know in my heart he's coming right back to Boston with me. I just hope he doesn't come back kicking and screaming. When the GPS says we're turning onto the street, Josh's hand tightens around his manga. He doesn't look up from it, though, even though he still hasn't turned the page. When I spot Tim's address on the curb in front of a run-down frame house, I pull the car over. The house is across the street on the driver's side, but Josh pretends to be sunk into his story. "We're here." Josh drops his book and finally looks up. I point to the house and Josh stares at it for a good 10 seconds. Then he puts the book in his backpack. He brought most of his things with him. The clothes I bought him, some of the books. They're all stuffed so tight in a backpack that barely zips, and he holds it in his lap with the hope that he has at least one parent that will take him. "Can we wait a little bit?" he asks. "Sure." While he waits, he fidgets with everything. The air vents, his seatbelt, the music on his Bluetooth. 10 minutes pass while I patiently give him the time to work up whatever courage he's in need of that will help him open the door. I look at the house, taking my attention off Josh for a while. There's an old white Ford in the driveway, which is probably why Josh hasn't worked up the courage to walk across the street and knock on his door yet. It's an indicator that someone is probably home. I haven't tried to talk him out of this because I know what it's like to want to know your father. He's going to live in this fantasy until he's able to confront his reality. As a kid, I had the highest hopes for family too, but after years of being disappointed, I realized that just because you're born into a group of people, that doesn't make them your family. "Should I just go knock?" Josh finally asks. He's scared. And to be honest, I'm not feeling the bravest right now either. I went through a lot with Tim. I'm not looking forward to seeing him again, and I am absolutely dreading the potential outcome of this meeting. I don't think this is the best place for Josh, and I'm in no position to tell him he can't reconnect with his father. But my biggest fear is that he's going to choose to stay here. That Tim is going to be like my mother and welcome Josh with open arms simply because he knows it's the one thing I don't want to happen. "I can go with you if you want," I say, even though it's the last thing I want to do. I'll have to stand in front of that man and pretend I don't want to punch him for the sake of my little brother. Josh doesn't move for a while. I'm staring at my phone, attempting to appear patient as he works up courage, but I want to throw the car in drive and get him out of here. I eventually feel Josh's finger briefly graze an old scar on my arm, so I look over at him. He's staring at my arm, taking in the faded scars that remain from the shit I endured living with Sutton and Tim. Josh never asked me about the scars, though. "Did Tim do that to you?" I clench my arm and nod. "Yeah. but it was a long time ago. How he treats a son might be completely different from how he treated a stepson. That shouldn't matter, right? If he treated you like that, why should he get another chance with me? It's the first time Josh has come close to admitting his father isn't a hero. I don't want to be the person he blames in the future for not having a relationship with his dad, but I want to tell him he's right. His father shouldn't get another chance. He left and never looked back. There's no excuse good enough to walk away from your son. There's this toxic belief that families should stick together simply because they're family. But the best thing I ever did for myself was walk away from them. It scares me to think of where I might be had I not done that. It scares me to think of where Josh might end up if he doesn't do that. Josh looks past me toward the house. His eyes grow a little wider, prompting me to turn and look. Tim is outside, making his way from the front door to his truck. Josh and I watch in mutually stunned silence. He looks fragile, older and smaller. Or maybe that's because I'm no longer a kid. He's swigging from the last of a beer can when he opens the front door to his truck. He tosses the empty can into the bed and then leans inside his cab in search of something. "I don't know what to do," Josh whispers. He seems all of the 12 years old that he is right now. It kind of breaks my heart to see him so nervous. Josh's eyes are pleading for truth when he looks back at me like he needs me to guide him in this moment. I've never said a bad word about Tim to Josh. But knowing I'm not being completely honest with him about my feelings feels like I'm doing a disservice to him as a brother. Maybe my silence on the matter is more damaging than my truth would be. I sigh and set my phone down, giving this moment my full attention. Not that it didn't have my full attention before, but I was trying to give Josh space. It doesn't seem like he wants it, though. He wants brutal honesty, and what else is an older brother good for if not for that? "I don't know my dad," I admit. "I know his name, but that's about it. Sutton said he left when I was young, probably about the same age you were when Tim left. It used to bother me, not knowing my father. I used to worry about him. I imagined there was something awful that was keeping him away, like he was locked up in a prison somewhere on a wrongful conviction. I used to come up with these wild scenarios that would excuse how he could know I existed but not be in my life. Because what kind of man could have a son and not want to know him?" Josh is still staring across the yard at Tim, but I can see that he's soaking up every word I'm saying. "My father never sent a penny of child support. He never made an effort at all. My father never bothered to do a Google search, because if he had, he would have easily found me. Hell, you did that at the age of 12. You found me, and you're a kid. He's a grown-ass adult." I move so that I have Josh's full attention. "So is Tim. He is a capable, grown man, and if he cared about anything more than himself, he would have made an effort. He knows your name. He knows what city you live in. He knows how old you are." Josh's eyes are starting to tear up. "It blows my mind that this man has you for a son and you want to be in his life, yet he still hasn't made an effort. You're a privilege, Josh. Believe me, if I'd known you existed, I would have knocked over buildings to find you." As soon as I say that, a tear trickles out of his eye. So Josh quickly looks out his passenger window away from Tim's house, away from me. I see him wipe at his eyes, and it breaks my heart. It also makes me angry as hell that they kept him from me knowingly. My mother knew I would have been a good brother to him, which is why she chose not to let us be a part of each other's lives. She knew my love for him would outweigh the love she was capable of, so she selfishly kept us apart. But I don't want my anger for my mother or Tim or even my father to bleed into Josh's decision. He's old enough to make up his own mind, so he can take my honesty and his hope, and I'll support him in whatever he decides to do with those things. When Josh finally looks back at me, his eyes are still filled with tears and questions and indecision. He's looking at me like I need to be the one to make this decision for him. I just shake my head. They took 12 years from us, Josh. I don't think I can forgive them for that, but I won't be upset if you do want to forgive them. I only ever want to be honest with you, but you are your own person. And if you want to give your father a chance to get to know you, I'll put a smile on my face and walk you straight to his front door. You just let me know how to be here for you, and I'll be here. Josh nods and uses his shirt to wipe away another tear. He inhales, and on his exhale he says, "He has a truck." I don't know what he means by that, but I follow his line of sight back to Tim's truck. All this time, I imagined him to be really poor, without a way back to Boston, he says. I even thought maybe he never came because he wasn't physically able to drive, like maybe his vision was too bad or something. I don't know. But he has a truck and he never even tried. I don't interfere with his thought process. I just want to be here for him when he finalizes it. He doesn't deserve me, does he? He says it like a statement rather than a question. Neither of them deserve you. He doesn't move for an entire minute as he stares past me out the window. But then he looks at me firmly, sitting a little taller. You know that homework I'm behind on? The family tree? Josh pulls at his seatbelt and begins to fasten it. They never said how big the tree needed to be. I'll just draw a baby seedling. They don't have branches. He pats the dash. Let's go. I laugh hard at that. I wasn't expecting it. The way this kid weaves humor into the most depressing moments gives me hope for him. I think he's going to be okay. A seedling, huh? I start the car and pull on my own seatbelt. That might work. I can draw a seedling with two tiny branches. Yours and mine. We'll be on our own brand new tiny family tree. One that starts with us. I feel heat behind my eyes, so I grab my sunglasses off the dash and put them on. A whole new family tree that starts with us. I like it. He nods. And we'll do a much better job of keeping it alive than our shitty parents did. Shouldn't be too hard. I am absolutely relieved by this decision. Josh may change his mind in the future, but I have a strong suspicion that even if he contacts his father going forward, he's never going to choose him over me. Josh reminds me a lot of myself, and devotion is a trait we have in spades. Atlas? Josh says my name right as I put the car in drive. Yep. Can I flip him off? I stare back at Tim and his truck and his house. It's an immature request, but one I happily respond to with, "Please do." Josh leans as far toward my window as his seatbelt will allow. I roll down the window and honk the horn. Tim looks over at us right as I start to drive away. Josh flips him off and yells, "Asshole!" out my window. Once we're out of Tim's eyesight, Josh falls back against his seat laughing. "It's asshole, Josh, one word." "Asshole," he says, pronouncing it the correct way. "Thank you. Now stop saying it. You're 12.
Chapter 32. Lily.
"Are you at home?"
The text is from Atlas, so I respond to it with, "For a minute, why?" I pack baby food into Emmy's diaper bag and then rush around the room, grabbing her a change of clothes. I throw a can of formula in as well, since I'm no longer breastfeeding, and then I scoop her up. "You ready to go see Riley?" Emmy smiles when I say Riley's name. When I picked her up this morning from Elisa's, I had a talk with both her and Marshall about everything that's happened with Ryle. Elisa agreed that it was smart to show my lawyer the texts he sent me. She also agreed that it's time we have a serious sit-down with Ryle. I'm nervous, but knowing she and Marshall have my back is extremely reassuring. As soon as we make it to my front door, there's a knock.
I glance through the peephole, relieved to see Atlas standing there. But Josh isn't with him, so my heart immediately sinks. Did he actually choose to stay with his father over Atlas? I swing open the door. What happened? Where's Josh? Atlas smiles, and the assurance in his smile fills me with instant relief.
It's fine. He's at my house.
I blow out a breath. Oh, why are you here then?
I'm on my way to my restaurant. I was driving by and thought I'd run up and steal a hug.
I smile, and he holds the door open for me. He can't give me a full-on hug since I have Emerson perched on my hip, so he gives me a quick kiss on the side of my head. Liar, my apartment isn't on your way. And it's Sunday. Your restaurant is closed.
Details,
he says, waving off my point.
Where are you headed?
Elisa's. We're having dinner with them tonight. I hoist the diaper bag onto my shoulder, but he takes it from me.
I'll walk you out.
He slings the diaper bag over his shoulder. Emmy reaches for him, and I think we're both a little surprised when she willingly transfers from my arms to his. She tucks her head against his chest, and the sight of it makes me pause for a second. It makes Atlas take a pause, too. But then he smiles at me and begins walking down to my car. He holds my hand the whole way. I take Emmy from him and buckle her into her car seat. We're finally in a position where Atlas can give me an actual hug, so he pulls me to him. His hug feels like an entire conversation. He's holding me in a way that makes it feel like he's needing strength, like he wants to take a piece of me with him. Where are you going again? I ask him, pulling back.
I really am going to my restaurant, he says. I asked Sutton to meet me there. We need to have a serious discussion about Josh, and I'd like to do it when it's just me and her. She feeds off an audience, so I refuse to give her one.
Wow. I'm actually on my way to Elisa's to have that sit-down with Ryle I told you I wanted. What is this, problem-solving Sunday? Atlas laughs softly.
Hopefully.
I kiss him. Good luck. He smiles gently.
You too. Be safe and call me as soon as you can.
He presses his mouth to mine one last time, and then when he pulls away, he says,
Love you, babe.
He walks to his car, and I don't know why his words leave me so flustered, but I'm smiling as I get into my car. Love you, babe. I'm still smiling as I drive away. My good mood surprises me, considering what I'm on my way to do and how it's more of a spontaneous intervention than a planned sit-down. I am going to Elisa and Marshall's for dinner, but Ryle has no idea I'm heading over there with a purpose. Lasagna? I ask Marshall when he opens the front door. I could smell the garlic and tomatoes from the hallway.
Elisa's favorite,
he says, closing the door behind me. He reaches for Emmy.
Come to Uncle Marshall,
he says, pulling her to him. She's giggling as soon as he makes a face at her. Marshall is one of Emmy's favorite people, but I think we'd be hard-pressed to find a kid who doesn't love Marshall. Is Elisa in the kitchen? Marshall nods.
Yeah. He's in here, too,
he says, whispering.
We didn't mention you were coming.
Okay. I set Emmy's diaper bag down and head for the kitchen. I see Ryle and Elisa's mother sitting with Riley in the living room when I pass by. I wave at her, and she smiles, but I don't stop to chat. I go in search of Elisa. When I walk through the kitchen door, I find Ryle leaning over the bar, chatting casually with Elisa, but as soon as he makes eye contact with me, his spine stiffens and he stands up straight. I don't react at all. I don't want Ryle to think he holds any sort of control over me anymore. Elisa has been expecting me. She acknowledges me with a nod, and then she closes the lasagna in the oven.
Perfect timing.
She drops the pot holders on the counter and points at the table. We have 45 minutes until it's ready, she says, guiding both Ryle and me toward the table.
What is this?
Ryle asks, looking back and forth between the two of us. Just a conversation, Elisa says, urging him to take a seat.
Ryle rolls his eyes, but reluctantly takes a seat across from both Elisa and me.
He leans back in his chair, folding his arms over his chest.
Elisa looks over at me, giving me the floor.
I'm not sure why I'm not scared right now. Maybe Atlas already having had a conversation with Ryle has put most of my concerns to rest. Having Elisa and Marshall in the apartment with us also feels like a layer of protection. And Ryle's mother, even though she has no clue what's about to transpire. Ryle keeps his behavior in check when his mother is around, so I'm grateful for her presence. Whatever is giving me strength right now, I don't sit and question it. I take advantage of it.
You asked yesterday if I spoke to my lawyer, I say to Ryle.
I did. She had some suggestions.
Ryle chews on his bottom lip for a few seconds. Then he lifts a brow, indicating he's listening.
I want you to undergo anger management.
As soon as the words come out of my mouth, Ryle laughs. He stands up, prepared to push in his chair and end this conversation. But as soon as he does, Elisa says,
Sit down, please.
Ryle looks at her, and then at me, and then back at her. Several seconds pass as he takes in what's happening. It's apparent he feels deceived right now, but I'm not here to give him empathy, and neither is his sister. Ryle loves and respects Elisa, so he eventually returns to his seat, despite his current anger.
While you're undergoing anger management, I would prefer for your visits with Emerson to take place here, or somewhere Marshall or Elisa are present.
Ryle swings his eyes to Elisa, and the look of betrayal he shoots her would have given me chills at one point in our past. But right now, that look does nothing to me. I continue.
Depending on your interactions with me going forward, we'll decide as a family when we feel comfortable with you having unsupervised visits with the girls.
The girls?
Ryle repeats incredulously, looking at Elisa.
Did she convince you I'm not safe around my own niece?
His voice is louder now. The kitchen door swings open, and Marshall walks in. He takes a seat at the head of the table and looks from Ryle to Elisa.
Your mom has the girls in the living room, he says to Elisa. What did I miss? Are you aware of this?
Ryle asks Marshall. Marshall stares at him for a beat and then leans forward.
Am I aware you lost your temper with Lily last week and pinned her against a door? Or am I aware of the texts you sent her? Or the threats you made when she said she was talking to her lawyer?
Ryle stares blankly at Marshall. His face reddens, but he doesn't immediately react. He's trapped in a corner, and he knows it.
A goddamn intervention, Ryle mutters, shaking his head.
He's annoyed, irritated, a little bit betrayed. Understandable. But he can either agree to cooperate, or he can fracture the few remaining relationships left in his life. Ryle pegs me with a jaded stare.
What else?
He asks, somewhat smugly. I've given you more than enough grace, Ryle. You know I have. But from this point forward, please know that Emerson is what matters to me. If you do anything threatening or harmful to me or our daughter, I will sell everything I own to fight you in court.
And I'll help her, Elisa says. I love you, but I'll help her.
Ryle's jaw is twitching. His expression is blank otherwise. He looks at Elisa and then at Marshall. The tension in the room is palpable, but so is the support. I could cry. I'm so grateful for them. I could cry for all the victims who don't have people like them. Ryle stews over everything for a long beat. It's so quiet, but I've made the point I wanted to make, and I've made it obvious that there's no room for negotiation. He eventually scoots back from the table and stands. He brings his hands to his hips and stares down at the floor. Then he drags in a long inhale before he heads for the kitchen door.
Before he leaves, he looks back toward us, but makes eye contact with none of us.
I'm off this Thursday. I'll be here around 10 if you want to make sure Emerson is here.
He leaves, and as soon as he does, my shield of armor collapses, and I shatter. Elisa puts her arms around me, but I'm not crying because I'm upset. I'm crying because I am so, so relieved. It actually feels like we accomplished something significant. I don't know what I'd do without you two, I say through my tears, hugging Elisa. She runs her hand over my hair and says, You'd be so miserable, Lily. We both start to laugh. Somehow.